I'm Jeff Slavatsky with Silicon Prairie News, and I've got a couple panelists here with me that will allow them to introduce themselves here momentarily. Thank you for coming. I did not shave my head for this panel, as these two gentlemen did, so you've got my full head care here. So, but this will be good. This will be a good kind of intimate conversation, and so I'm excited for the opportunity to ask some questions of these two gentlemen, but also really engage the audience as well. So encourage you to participate through questions throughout the process as well. As I said, I'm Jeff Slavatsky, one of the co-founders of Silicon Prairie News. We're a digital media agency in Omaha, Nebraska. We have offices in Omaha, Des Moines, and folks on the ground in Kansas City. Our goal is really to highlight, promote, cover, connect the entrepreneurs, the startups, the investors, the mentors, frankly, the ecosystem within the region. And so, you know, we are trying to say there's companies like Zarly and like Dwolla and handfuls of others that are there, that exist, that are doing amazing things, but for far too often have gone unnoticed and gone unheard. And so essentially what we're trying to do is build that community, that ecosystem through the site, through Silicon Prairie News. We've got quite a few of our team here today in the front row. If you guys want to raise your hand, you can. No? Three of them? Four of them? There we go. So we've got our team with us, and then we do that through events as well. So we believe in the ability to connect folks offline, and you'll see kind of as we go through the presentation some of the photos that supplement that activity. So, you know, it's one thing to connect people online, but it's another thing to connect them offline as well through events and activities that we facilitate. So with that, I'll turn it over to Bo Fishback and allow just a quick kind of bio of each of the panelists, and we'll dive into some of the questions.
Bo. Hi, I'm Bo. I'm the CEO of a company called Zarly. We do mobile marketplace stuff. So you go there and say what you want, how much you're willing to pay for it, and then people can make money. So everybody at South By is buying umbrellas this week. Pretty sure my wife's in the back ordering a pair of galoshes right now to be delivered to her. We're just about a year old, and it's been a pretty crazy last year. So we raised some money and built a team from zero to about 40 people since actually South By last year, which was the first time that the word Zarly existed, and have just been kind of holding on tight.
Awesome. Ben?
Yeah, my name is Ben Milne. I'm the CEO of a company called Dwolla. Essentially, it's how many people have like heard of Dwolla? Cool. Where are you guys? How many people are from the Midwest who are in here? All right, cool. So I grew up in Iowa. I had another company in Iowa before that I sold and kind of decided to stay in Iowa, and we were building this one. Our company is maybe just a little bit older, actually probably a lot older. We've been working on the idea for like three and a half years. But we've only been live in the marketplace for about a year and a half. You know, company's grown pretty well, and we concentrate on basically building a payment network that bypasses credit and debit cards, but also kind of replaces the ACH system for banks, which is about a $32 trillion market annually. So there's kind of like this undercurrent of money movement in the U.S., which is pretty huge, that we play in.
Awesome. Good. Thanks, guys. Real quick, maybe give folks kind of a context in terms of the concept behind Zarly and behind Dwolla as well. I mean, where did it come from? Where did it originate in a sense? You know, what was the impetus for, you know, putting things into place for each of the companies?
In Dwolla's case, in my old company, all of our money came in through credit cards. I was the only investor. I was the only shareholder. I didn't have partners. At the time, that was costing me like around 50 grand a year in my early 20s, and I just got really fucking obsessed with how do I not pay credit card fees. So then we just started kind of pitching banks on how maybe it could work, and subsequently we created Dwolla and I sold the other company. Kind of the obsession about payments just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
I used to work at this place called the Kauffman Foundation that's in Kansas City, and I went to a startup weekend in LA last year and pitched an idea for like a reverse local eBay, and then I quit my job on Monday, and I knew nothing about commerce or mobile platforms or anything, and we just kind of went all in with me and two other guys and started figuring out as we went. So we did a one-day trial when we were 10 days old at South By last year with like a terrible, terrible product, and it worked amazingly well. And so we thought, holy shit, we better build a real one. And we spent about 2 months building a real product, went live last summer, and have been kind of learning a lot along the way, how commerce works, why mobile's different than the web, what it takes to really build a badass team fast. And, you know, we've been fortunate to get some great support around us and with some great investors and, you know, a couple of great people on our board and stuff. And so I kind of think sometimes we feel like a 3 or 4 year old company, but we just had our 1 year birthday yesterday, I think. So
happy birthday.
Yeah.
Talk to me, guys, each of you, in terms of talent in the area. So what do you see from the Midwest? Now, I know, Bo, you've hired from across the country. We've got headquarters, obviously, San Francisco, Kansas City, some operations. Ben, heavy in Des Moines. What do you see? What have you found? What's, you know, kind of dive into that a little bit. What's changed over time? Are you able to find the talent you need? What are the drawbacks?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the major drawbacks, especially in the Midwest, is not that many people actually understand kind of startup community or startup behavior. Most of them are pretty entrenched in like the sea of cubes. So when they're looking at leaving the sea of cubes, some people are really excited about that. But there's also like a little bit different mentality where like Bo's not wearing shoes today. That would be normal at our office. It's kind of like we don't care. And we don't really even care when you come to work. So it's a very different kind of mentality that people aren't really comfortable with. But in terms of talent, the talent's absolutely there. So like in Des Moines and in Omaha, which are really close, obviously, to one another, and then even Kansas City. So Kansas City is just, like, unbelievable in design and, like, front-end work. Omaha is phenomenal in payments. First Data, PayPal, Jack Henry are all there. So there's tons of information around how to do payments. And Des Moines is really heavy in banking and insurance. So it's kind of from a financial background and all the architecture as well, there's people there to kind of help build that product. They're just totally unnoticed by the rest of the world, which is actually super beneficial because mm-hmm. it means we don't have all these like shiny toys to play with like on the coast. We just work on like product.
Yeah, I don't know. We had like a weird experience here. So like when we very first started, we made the list of like me and I've got two co-founders. And so one of them was in the process of moving from Seattle to DC. One of them was in the process from moving from LA back to New York. And I was in Kansas City, and like the day after we decided we were going to go and do this thing, we all made like the short list of the best people we'd ever worked with. And it was, we didn't care at all where they were, honestly. Like we were geographically agnostic, and, they were all over the place, right? One of them was in Austin. A couple of them were in Greenville, South Carolina, some dudes in Seattle, like they were all over the place. And so we just started hiring the greatest people ever. Some of them ended up being in the Midwest. You know, we've had an office in Kansas City that went from 0 to 15 to 7, and it kind of, I think, will continue to bounce around as we build it up. I don't really care where people are until we started getting big enough that that communication was becoming a problem. And so, you know, over the last few months, like we've got more people in San Francisco than anywhere else, but like the dudes who do all of our design are literally in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So I would say like the big challenge we had though was actually not on hiring people, because like whatever, mm-hmm. you can hire people anywhere now. And what I think actually is tough actually in the Midwest is when we made the list of the superstars that we wanted involved with the company that we didn't want to work there, right? Like we made the list of the top 3 people in the world we want on our board of directors. Like number 1 on that list was Meg Whitman. Like Meg Whitman only gets to live in one place, right? And like she does live in the Bay Area, right? And so I think that that was the thing where like, you know, on like maybe people who work there like don't get the startup culture, but you can get them there like when they get exposed to it, because it's a cool thing. Like the investors that we wanted to be real smart money. Like I could have raised money in Kansas City. I could have raised money anywhere for this company, honestly. Like we were in, like, it was really easy for us to raise money because we hit the market at a great time. But the people that I wanted involved, like were not in the city that I was living in at the time. And so that's honestly why like so much of our center of gravity, I mean, we ended up with a pretty big office in New York and a pretty big one in San Francisco. And the reason is because like I have board meetings at Meg Whitman's office at HP, like every 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, it's amazingly helpful for us to have that. But you know, I think that's the thing where like, if like you make $1 billion and then you stay in Des Moines and like everybody who runs a payments company wants you on their board, like that would be a humongous thing.
Yeah. And I think that like for us, I mean, you've also had like this stellar experience over this long span of time with like mm-hmm. Kaufman and, you know, meeting a lot of other entrepreneurs and investors and kind of getting to know the ecosystem. Like we were totally fucking green. Like when we started raising money, we had no idea, you know, what we were doing. And, you know, the stuff that, you know, I think a lot of the guys that, you know, I've met through you, who now I like have the, I feel like I'm on a first name basis with him, and I can actually have a conversation with him.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Like, so, like, our investors and so on and so forth were just like products of basically people at Silicon Prairie News, like, giving us introductions, and people with Startup Weekend giving us introductions. So, like, our network kind of built out of Iowa. We didn't, and that's just the way we built the company, was just out of Iowa. And then when we went to raise capital, because we didn't really know how to do like satellite offices really efficiently, and we knew we needed really talented people really quickly, we just tried to find investors that were okay with us and wanted to support us being in Iowa. So like our board meetings, like if you don't come to Iowa for board meetings, like you really can't invest in the company. And that's just like maybe just a product of where we're at with the company and the way we're growing the team right now is maybe we just don't know any better.
Do you think that's going to change like in the next, let's say 3 years for you if you hit a home run?
Oh shit, yeah.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. There's absolutely no way that we cannot connect with New York and San Francisco and be a sustainable company. Like the whole concept of we must and have to do it in Iowa, like is already dead. I mean, you have to connect with the rest of the world. But I see no reason why we can't keep a really strong core there. And if nothing else, just because there's not a lot of other kind of like fast growing companies there, that if you put out a job application, get 150 applicants overnight. Yep. I mean, there's just not a lot of companies doing that there. And Des Moines is really great for that. But we're definitely already starting to look at what does the next kind of outreach look like in New York and San Francisco. And our investors are super influential on how we're going to do that.
Hmm. Where do you see that going? I mean, over time, Ben, you've done a tremendous amount with DeWall and your team to kind of, I'd say, really motivate and inspire regional entrepreneurs, regional startups, right? Especially with the, I mean, just all the work that you've done, but now recently with this round too as well, right? With, you know, Union Square, Mark Echo, and the whole team. So, I mean, over the long term, I mean, you're pretty passionate about Des Moines. You're pretty passionate about the Silicon Prairie. What, you know, do you see that continuing in a sense, even though you're building out, you know, nationally, New York, San Francisco offices? And Bo, I want to hear your thought on that as well. You know, what's your goal and,
So Des Moines makes sense to have the company in from an economics perspective and from a talent perspective right now. And when that is no longer the case, we will expand outside of Des Moines.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I hate to oversimplify it, but it really is kind of that simple. Because if we start making concessions on the growth or opportunity in the company for doing it in one place, it's not even going to matter what the company does because I'm going to get fucking fired super fast. A new CEO is going to come in, and if the company doesn't perform, I'm out, and so is the company out of Des Moines. So, I mean, it's just having kind of the knowledge that you have to do what's best for the company, and inevitably that will be, you know, expanding outside of the area.
Yeah.
And us doing that is actually going to be really good for the area. Obviously, if the company continues to grow and that's home, then inevitably it will be good for the area.
Yeah. It makes me think about something actually that Meg told me when, like, at our first or second board meeting. Meg Whitman, who's on our board that built eBay, she's like a kind of a big deal.
I feel like who in the room does not know
right.
who
yeah, yeah. Well, right. Somebody will, right, whatever. So she's like a big deal, right? And she's like super helpful for us. And she told me that when eBay, when she'd been there for 3 years, she put together an entire plan to move the company from the Bay Area to Colorado. And like that was what she wanted to do. She wanted to move eBay to whatever, Boulder, wherever the hell she wanted to move it. But like that's and they had a plan. They shopped real estate, all this kind of stuff. And at the time, like eBay was publicly traded, but not like too many people. Like they could have pulled it off. She said they ended up not doing it because logistics were getting too hard and stuff. And in hindsight, she actually regrets not doing it.
Hmm.
But she said like that company never could have gotten where it did unless it kind of had like, you know, and it was a very different time then also. It was harder to do that stuff kind of outside of the Bay Area. But like they had to be there for a certain amount of time, but then there was an opportunity to kind of graduate from that. And in some ways, like, I think like we're far, like I have no idea still like if this company is going to work or not, but like we have a chance still, like we've got a good shot at it working. And I think that 2, 3, 4 years from now, I think we will start to figure out like pick intentionally like what's going to be home base if we end up with 2 or 3 or 5,000 employees. And I don't think it is at all like a shoe-in that it's the Bay Area or New York or whatever. Like there's like not lots of nice things that come from like a networking and speed perspective there, but there's a lot of just total garbage that comes with it too. But it's you know, I'm a big believer in like these companies are too hard to build if you want to be like self-righteous about anything, like location, like it's like you have to do every possible thing you can to give yourself like that little incremental edge. And like sometimes like that means like you compromise on quality of life, right? Like like, my life is hard right now. Like, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm in San Francisco. Monday and Friday, I'm in Kansas City sometimes until somebody in New York calls, and I got to go there. And I'm trying to figure out if I can get home and, like, see my wife and baby before I go to another place. Like, it's not like the easy path, but it is like, the path we're on that was totally focused on removing things that could cause us to fail and maximizing opportunities for, like, hitting a home run. And like everything else, like, I don't really give a shit. Like, that's kind of, like, what it, like, very simply comes down to.
That's good. Yeah. That's really good. Go, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, one thing that Zarly did really well really early on, you know, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but we definitely learned from it, is, you know, if you're building outside of the area, being relevant and kind of valley chatter has a ton of value. And kind of the idea of, if you try to be overly idealistic about it, I mean, you're totally screwed, because not only are you going to lock yourself out from them, but you're going to basically turn them into competitors, and you don't want to compete with the entire valley. You want to make friends with them. And you should be working with people in the valley in New York the same way you are kind of anywhere else in the Midwest. And ignoring it and treating it like you don't need them or you don't need to work with them at all is honestly just a pretty ignorant decision.
Yeah, can I give a great example? Yeah. So I was talking to a guy the other day who lives in Chicago, who runs, like, a super awesome company. Like, anyone in the payment space would know this company. And I actually went to business school with this guy and never even met him there. And we met up in San Francisco a couple weeks ago. And he's, like, a Chicago dude, right? He was an EIR at a big deal venture fund. He went to be CEO of a company that's been, like, on a rocket ship. And they're based in Chicago. And he told me that the biggest thing that he's concerned about right now is they're not a part, even though they're super successful, like, they make money already, unlike us. And that his biggest concern right now is that there's such a tight clubby network right now, like, in the valley, like, for example, just Y Combinator companies that are starting to build payment companies, that he doesn't feel like his company is part of that dialogue, so much so that he's, like, contemplating acquiring a YC company in San Francisco just to make sure that they're a part of that conversation. Because, you know, whatever, the Stripes and the Pound Pays and all these guys, like, in the payment space, like, the next crop of Y Combinator companies, it's like, oh, we'll use those guys because Paul Graham introduces us and he says they're good guys or whatever. And so, like, in some ways, like, you got to be a part of it, like you said,
yeah,
I think.
It's super tough because you're going to come into it as an outsider. You're going to have to pound the pavement. You're going to have to spend more time. And, like, there's the argument of, like, I want to stay home. Well, you build your company from the Midwest, like, you're never going to fucking be home. I mean, that's reality. I have an amazing girlfriend, and she stays with me because she's okay with me going on a date with her once every 2 weeks. That's about how often I see her. And it's, like, how it works, right? So, like, building a company in the Midwest, you're probably not actually going to be spending a lot of your time in the Midwest. It is what it is. And that's just...
Do you think that's investor-driven mostly, like, for
so
you guys?
For me, that's me-driven. Like, I want the company to succeed.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, if I want to go do a deal with a big bank, like, I don't want to talk to you, like, on a conference call. Like, I want a whiteboard and a marker, and let's, like, make this thing work, right? And, like, I don't care. I'll go to your 40-story building. Maybe I'll put a tie on that day. Probably not, but I'll probably shower for sure.
Wash your hair.
Yeah, wash my hair. So I actually gave myself a haircut yesterday. I've been cutting my own hair because I can't get to the. I don't even really call him a stylist because not like I get styled, but I miss a spot. So I had to, like, pull hairs out of my head because I missed a spot yesterday. It was bad. But yeah, I mean, I got off on a tangent. I apologize.
That was me.
You think not investor driven though?
No, it's totally me driven. I mean, I think that I'd get fired if, like, I didn't do my job. But the opportunities there are a lot of good opportunities in Des Moines. But, like, we want to do big deals with big banks, like, they're in New York, right? And we want to do great deals with great tech companies. And by large majority, a lot of great tech companies are not in Des Moines. And we have to accept that. I mean, that's not necessarily us saying the community isn't thriving, but it is us recognizing that you can't just run yourself in circles to. You got to go where the talent is. And I'm not saying the talent's not also in Des Moines, but...
You go. Yeah, I was just going to say, so, like, why not just move, right? Like, so, why not keep, like, 10 developers in Des Moines and, like, move?
So it's totally possible that might happen. It's unlikely, but it is possible. So right now, we're scaling up the technical side of our company. So we already know our product works. We already know there's a lot of moving pieces inside of our product that are actually super, 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 super insanely difficult to duplicate. And there are people that have such an ingrained knowledge of the product already in Des Moines that we want to build off that in Des Moines. And that's all going to be a lot of technical-driven kind of hiring. And we don't need to hire those people anywhere outside of Des Moines, but we will inevitably need to start doing kind of biz dev and things like that elsewhere, where that's going to become like a whole other part of our company and developer evangelism that doesn't even exist right now. And I don't think that's going to be in Des Moines.
So what about you personally?
I don't give a shit. Like, I'm never home anyway. So it's kind of like when I'm done and when I stop, where I end up spending like 30% of my time is where like I'll get an apartment or something or buy a house or something. Like,
okay.
Ben, all your staff's in Des Moines right now, right? Or how? Two questions. How many employees do you have, both you guys, and then where kind of locations based?
I have like 40 people, I think, that work at Zarly. I think about 25-ish of them are probably in San Francisco.
Okay.
And then they're in a bunch of different places. Okay. They're all over the place after that.
Yeah, we've got about 20, and all but two are in Des Moines. And the ones that aren't are in Kansas City.
Okay, good. Any questions from the audience at this point? Yeah. Do you mind? They asked, ma'am, they asked if we'd ask the questions in the mic. I know we're a tight group, but that'd be great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I just wanted to answer the same question that about whether the coast is investor-driven, your choice of being on the coast.
I think in my case, largely yes, investor driven. Not because of a lack of money, though, because of who are the right people to get involved. Like, I talked to a ton of investors last summer with the opportunity to kind of take money from whoever I wanted. And after talking to about 60 investors, so Kleiner Perkins led our last round, it was very, very clear to me after the first meeting with Kleiner that, like, that was who I wanted involved with us. Mm-hmm. But it was as much individual-driven. Like, the dude on our board, he's a South by this guy named Chiwa. It's like, I wanted to go to see this guy at board meetings, and he comes to our office every week and spends a half day, and, like, that person I wanted involved. And, like, I mean, maybe it would have been the case if he was somewhere else, but, like, he wasn't. He's, like, got an office on Sand Hill Road. So, yeah, right? So, like, and then when Meg came to the party, right, like, Meg plus Kleiner, like, their offices happened to be a mile apart from each other. If it were not for their involvement, I would probably spend a lot less time in San Francisco, honestly.
No, I think totally fair. I mean, we were super selective. I think part of it was about, you know, where we were as a company as well. So we've got a lot, maybe like different moving pieces than Zarly. Mm-hmm. It's not like better or worse. It's just different moving pieces around like banking regulation, money management, international relationships. I mean, that's a rabbit hole that we could talk about for fucking days. And we really needed access to different marketplaces to allow us to kind of solve foundation problems that were not kind of marketing issues. So we're really trying to right now kind of continue to kind of like make our bed to go out and scale. We're scaling at the same time. But I think we'll probably start getting a lot more aggressive about that. And, you know, I think that's also the point when, you know, Dwalla started showing up in different markets, especially where we're spending a lot more time doing hiring and building teams externally. And we've been interviewing people outside of town for quite some time. We just haven't found the right fits to kind of run those offices.
What about where are your users?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So, I mean, Des Moines always been good, but it's not where the predominant users are anymore. New York and San Francisco are like hotspots for usage.
Okay.
I mean, not buying at coffee shops, but
yeah, expand on that a little bit. And Bo, I mean, is Casey? I've always heard is top five or Zarly. Is it still
weirdly enough? Oklahoma City is more active than Kansas City now.
Interesting.
I don't know why. We've never had anyone go there, but weird.
But like, that's an interesting conversation of itself. Like sometimes like shit, just something gravitates in one direction and something just kind of takes off. And it's not always intentional, but I mean, I think that when people start using the product for things that you didn't necessarily even market to them.
And Ben, you've blogged on that a couple times, I know, kind of talking about that. Just excitement and kind of interest that you've seen from that as well, right? In terms of different pockets or areas that kind of just show up and you're like, wait.
Yeah, I mean, it can be super good or super bad, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you build your company and then sometimes you have like this one store that just starts kicking ass. And then you have like these other things that you're just kind of like, what the hell is this? And it ends up becoming like a huge time dump, right? I'm sure you know what that's like too. You want to build technology that is open as humanly possible so that it can be manipulated to cater to people's like creativity and like wants and desires. And if your kind of technology can serve as a platform for that, that's really exciting. But sometimes it has unintended consequences.
question. Good question. Yeah. Next question.
To the extent you've worked with lawyers and law firms, do you find you also have to go to the coast for those to get the ones with the relevant experience, or are there?
Are you a lawyer? Oh man. You actually probably have a harder time with this. I don't know. Like on the legal front.
So like I've had lawyers not want to work with me because they work with people who don't want them working with me. So like I've been sort of locked out of certain conversations because their clients don't want them working with me. And I don't know if, why that necessarily, well, fuck that. I know why it is. I won't go that route. Just tell you the truth, I guess. But we've been really fortunate, especially on the investor side, that they've already got this huge kind of network of attorneys that they work with and they're comfortable with. And we've really started to leverage that really heavily. Also, really early in our kind of life cycle, one of our early investors was a former banker, and one of our really early advisors was a former regulator. So we got a lot of really good advice about who to work with, and we've just started getting into bigger and bigger and bigger firms as kind of the deals get bigger and the problems get bigger.
So one of my co-founders in a past life was a lawyer. And so we had like a kind of semi, I always say he was like a mediocre at best attorney, but like apparently he was actually pretty good at what he did. And he had a pretty like robust network in that space. New York, San Francisco, Kansas City, I don't like any lawyers. So I've yet to work with any that I'm like super psyched about. I think a little bit, right? Like I know like an amazing IP attorney who's in Houston, Texas.
I'm just going to say I really like our IP attorney.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I really like our IP attorney.
Yeah. I think as you start to raise outside money, like you get heavily, heavily like kind of like encouraged to talk to certain attorneys and certain firms and stuff. We've largely kind of like just tuned out to that. So our corporate counsel is in San Francisco, but it's because it was a personal friend of one of my co-founders. I don't know if it matters too much, with the exception of the dude you work with when you're doing a financing. Like, you know, we had a three party financing last year, us and two investors that all had their own counsel, and one was in DC, one was in San Francisco, and the other one was in San Francisco. Well, so two of the three were in San Francisco. But financings are kind of like an anomaly. You know, normally like I just try to not do things that like involve those guys.
Good.
Yes. How much of your usage so far is outside of the U.S., and when do you think you will potentially put a footprint for your companies outside of the U.S. and globalize?
That's a great question. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So you can't get Zarly outside of the U.S. right now, and 30% of our inbound web and mobile inquiries come from international. Even though there's no product. So like it's probably the number one inquiry that I get 5 to 10 times a week is, when are you coming to fill in the blank? Amsterdam, Moscow, London, Beijing, like, right, exactly. So we get this a lot. We're working on it. I would really, really love to launch an international version of Zarly this year. And the sooner the better. But we have a couple hard problems to solve there, just in terms of payment and currency and kind of how we deal with that stuff. And we just don't quite have the bandwidth to do it yet. But I'd be super happy if this thing was available everywhere on the planet Earth sometime like third quarter this year.
Yeah, I mean, in our case, our product is not available internationally either. Part of that is a regulatory kind of concern about how we're viewed internationally. And we also deal with a lot of really interesting data. So how we kind of manage that internationally as well is kind of a question. A big part of it is also bandwidth. So now that technically we know how to do it, you know, we can move $1 million anywhere on the planet for less than it costs to send an SMS. And we know how to do that in any currency. It's done. But all the moving pieces around it, also as it relates to customer support, is a huge concern for us. Primarily because how you describe in a tone how you resolve something is a little bit different in like Cantonese and Mandarin, and how am I going to go about doing that? And I'm not going to be able to go spend that much time in China to like figure that out. So I've got to find really good people in, you know, other countries to basically manage those types of experiences. But international availability is part of our platform. I mean, our goal is to build a ubiquitously acceptable payment network. And so we definitely want to be there sooner than later. But, you know, we're a very small team still. And as we kind of scale up to 40, 60, 80, we'll probably be at 80 or 100 before I think us probably really start being like aggressive in international markets.
Great question. Yeah. I want to go back to kind of some of the talk around mentorship. Who were some of the key individuals that were behind your guys' kind of beginnings, birth of the company, and, you know, do they still play a role today too?
So I feel like you played that role for like a ton of people, and at Kauffman, like you were playing that role when you decided to like do it, right?
Yeah.
So I'd be really interested to hear from you. Like, who's your mentor, Bo?
Yeah. I mean, now I have a cheater answer, which is like I have Meg Whitman in my life, right? Like, which is
like that is
it's a total cheat answer, but it's like why we went and got her, right? Like we had an extremely high bar for that, and it's because like me and both my co-founders, like we'd worked with a ton of startups before, like in a lot of different capacities, and I mean, there's a short list of people who like I would love to spend a lot of time with to just get smarter about how to do this. Meg is on that list. Reid Hoffman is on that list. Jeff Bezos is on that list. And that list pretty much is over then, right? Like those are like in my mind, the people who like, I think we and I personally can like learn more from than anyone else. So like I get Meg now, which is awesome. That said, like, you know, I think the hard part of this job is that everyone has advice and ideas, like everyone, right? Like I get the unsolicited from my about me page email, like, dude, I got this idea. I'm sure you've never thought of it. Like you should make the screen red. And it's like, thanks, dude. And I think that the hard part about this job is to figure out like the signal to noise ratio, right? Like we get great advice from honestly all of our investors that we take really seriously. We get great advice from people who are just psyched about what we're doing and kind of want to help. And we get great advice from like 21-year-old college students who are like running our campus programs who are like, dude, if you guys would just do this, it would work better. And so I kind of think of it in like my case is like much more of like, how do we make sense out of all of the people who are like with great intentions trying to give us input, and like kind of synthesizing that and turning it into something actionable is the job. And the exception is, every single time we spend an hour with Meg, it changes what we do next with our product, the way we build our team, who we hire. Literally every single time we sit down with her, we come out of it with a different direction. And for me personally, like it's the first time I've ever been around someone like that in my entire life where like everything, like I want to go to board meetings and say like, yeah, here's how things are going. Now everybody shut up and just let Meg talk. Like that's like the perfect board meeting for me. And that's why I know she's like the right person to be involved with us.
It's good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for us, we're in a super different kind of transitional period where I think a lot of it for us is understanding at a high level kind of what philosophically we're doing either right or wrong. So not necessarily what do we do on these next three hires, which, you know, some of our investors are really, really active in. But there's like probably a group of like 20 people who I just intermittently like reach out to. I'm like, Bo is one of them. And just kind of say like, hey, I have no idea. What are your thoughts? Or like, this is somebody I'm talking to. I really like them. Are they a douchebag? And that is super helpful in helping kind of build the team out. And, you know, I'd say right now there's not like any one person that I'm really going to. It's like kind of, I'm doing it in like a crowdsource method, I guess, with like a group of people I really trust. And typically I end up coming out of it with some clarity about which way to go. And that could be on a regulation, that could be on a hire, that could be on a new product. But at the end of the day, right now, I'm also finding a lot of value in getting out in front of people who either like don't use Dwolla at all or like almost are totally unaware of it. And that's driving me really heavily to focus. Like right now, I've got a lot of like noise in my head, but I'm super focused on like the next two things with product. That's because if I don't fix these two things with product, I don't feel like anything else is ever going to be there and like it's all going to die. And I'm totally being dramatic about it, but that's also the way it is when, like, you're building the company. It's kind of like the next two things you see in your head. It's like, this is the only fucking thing in the world right now, and you just become totally myopic about it. I don't know if you have that problem, too, but it's just kind of just get laser focused on, like, the next few things you're going to do and then just drive.
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem. I think that's the job.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I mean, I think that's, like, it's hilarious. So we launched version 2.0 of Zaarly like 2 days ago, right? And for like the last 3 months, it has been like the only thing on anyone's brain. And about a month ago, we were like, okay, so what's after that? And it was like, don't anybody talk about what's after that. Like, let's just do this. So we kind of start to run like the channel of what's next. And like, I think we have a pretty clear idea of it. But I don't know. I think it's quite a narrowing experience in some ways, right? Like my last job was like this super like intellectually like satisfying, broad ranging, explore this, give away some money, do this, fly to Indonesia for a week, like anything you want to learn. Like the job was to go and learn. This job's like real different. It's like horse blinders and like work hard and fast and try to build something awesome. And like, I think, you know, I think I told my wife like early on, like, there's a high probability I'm going to be much more boring for the next couple of years, but like that's just kind of how this goes. And I mean, as long as she's cool with it, then I'm cool with it.
So this is kind of like, how did you guys choose like who is going to be the CEO of the company? Because like you have like multiple co-founders and like you guys kind of work together on the early stage of the company. So you're just like, yeah, like I know this is going to be brutal, but like, all right, do I flip a coin for it? Draw straws? Like what'd you guys do? So the reason I ask is because, like, being a startup CEO, how many people have like built a company before in the room? Like, it's fucking brutal, right? So if you're going at it for like the second or third time, like it's exciting, but at the same time, were you guys like, well, I want to do it, I don't want to do it?
Yeah, no, we got into this thing so quick. It literally came out of a startup weekend. Like, I mean, I pitched an idea on Friday night. Sunday, we decided, pretty good idea. Let's do this thing. I think part of it is like we're all kind of grown-ups. Like all of us had done companies before. Like we're all in our 30s kind of a thing. And like literally what is everyone's role going to be and what is the equity breakdown was a 20-second conversation.
That's awesome.
Where one of my co-founders, the one who was the ex-lawyer, said, hey, we should probably tackle this quick. Here's my proposal. And we were like, yep, do it. And it was like me CEO, Ian CTO, Eric COO/CMO/general counsel kind of handyman. And with like a pretty sane equity breakdown. And then like, we've honestly like never even talked about it once since.
That's
like,
awesome.
It was, but ours was also like coming into it, right? Like I was going to be the CEO. Like there wasn't an option for someone else to be the CEO kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian was going to be the CTO. And so, I actually really like 3-person founding teams, like for that reason, because like outside guy, inside guy and tech guy, like that balance is one, that just like really, really, really works. And I think it's one of the reasons that we've been able to go so fast.
Questions? Any others? Ben, I want to go back to the raising of the money and the capital. I guess what was the tipping point or where, in terms of the outside money, the outside round, right? So you've got a list of investors in the latest round. So
I feel like, why are you laughing, Bo?
I'm just curious. I totally want to know what you think.
I mean, a couple different ways you could take that. Where, you know, when did you realize, okay, interesting, we're in a totally different space now, outside of the region, totally different players.
So,
and, you know, I mean, there's been the reports, right, of a list 700 people long, right, that want to get in and invest. So it's crazy what you're dealing with. So how did it, when did that take place, and how did you deal with that whole process?
So the first money we raised was super, super different. So it took me like a year to raise the first million. Part of it was because I was doing it in Iowa, which is, don't fucking raise money in Iowa. And I raised it from a bank or a credit union and a services company. So I got a financial institution and a financial services company, which does credit, debit, risk, underwriting, fraud mitigation for financial institutions to basically invest in the company, which is really great at that point in time because, you know, we built out all the fraud mitigation systems and all that stuff. But the second round of capital, we'd already built a technology that honestly a lot of the companies who people were throwing a lot of money into like hadn't figured out. And we actually built kind of like a structure from the company standpoint that meant a few certain things from a regulatory perspective that a lot of companies externally also hadn't figured out. So that in of itself was super valuable. So we knew we could probably go out and raise a significant amount of capital just on the technology alone without the customer base that was already growing. And locally, a lot of the investors locally didn't understand the deal. Like the opportunity here was not to go build a company that we wanted to flip for $40 or $50 million, which is exactly what a lot of the local investors would have wanted to do. Like we want to build something really significant. We want to build something that is globally available that could grow into ubiquity. And that was the goal. And we knew that in order to do that, we needed outside minds and people that had built really significant companies. So the first place I went was, how do I get in front of the PayPal guys? So like, The PayPal guys were really interesting because the conversation with them is more of like an argument until everybody's quiet. But you come out of it so much smarter. It's unbelievable. And the first time I ever did that with those guys, it's like, I have to be around these guys more often. I have to be around people like this more often. I need people to tell me that, like, you can't fucking do it this way. You have to do it this way. And this is how we saved $1 billion over here. Like, and those people, unfortunately, just kind of weren't there. So that's why we knew we needed outside money, because what we needed for expertise to get us to the next level was not in Des Moines. It was elsewhere, right? And we were also very specific about how much money we wanted to raise. So for good or bad, we did not allow ourselves to fall into the, well, this is the number we got from this guy, this is the number we got from this guy, who's ever going to give us a bigger number, like, in terms of valuation we're going to run with. We said we want this much money at this number, and then anybody that didn't want to play that, it was just a dead conversation. And the reason we did it that way is just simply because I was scared shitless I would get super, 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 like, oh my God, it's worth this much money, or oh my God, you're going to give me this much money. How am I going to spend that? You know? And it's fuck it, take it. Like, that's a lot of money, you know? And that's just the reason we did it that way, and right or wrong, that's just the reason we did it that way.
So how'd it get so hot? How'd your deal get hot?
Yeah.
I think because we started telling people that unless you gave us like a term sheet, we won't talk. And we started telling people that we can't meet with you. We already have this, and we're already too far down. And you know, like, some people got really aggressive. Some people, you know, took it the right way. Some people took it the wrong way. And like, I started asking for meetings with for us, it was a little difficult because some of the really big firms that have people that do stuff like Greylock, right? Like, I love Josh Hellman at Greylock. Yeah. He's amazing. But even a $5 million round, say even they lead with like a 2.5 or a 3, like, that's a small bite size, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Reed's not going to join your board for that.
Nope.
So you might just become like another piece of the portfolio that's not really relevant until you go out and you do like another monster, or like you do a monster round, right? And we really needed expertise right now. So we knew that maybe funds like that weren't exactly the right fit. But like, USV wanted to come in, provide like a ton of value, lead the round, and be super active. And Albert knows the space really well. They're brilliant on product. Really respect Fred, love working with those guys, and I talk to them every day. I just talk to them a lot.
Yeah.
So it's been a really good relationship for us.
And you were really smart. You were really strategic on that too, right? I mean, in terms of not only the amount and the money, but who, right? Like, who plays what role in terms of why am I bringing them in?
So we definitely tried to be, but we got lucky. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, the deal that we had kind of like fell apart, and somebody ended up calling one of my friends and just kind of like I got offended, and I was just like, ah, fuck it, it's dead. And somebody called one of my friends and said, hey, I'm pretty sure like Ben didn't understand what we were saying. Can you give us a hand? And like, one of my best friends in the world called me. It's like, hey, you know, you made a mistake. You're wrong. Give him a call back. That's what it took. Like, a friend just say like, you fucked up. So, you know, we worked it out, and they ended up investing in the company. And like, I almost blew it because I didn't understand what they were saying.
Sure.
Right. I think I even like sent him a link to like a YouTube video or something in the response. Like, it's just like not super proactive, but we were like, we tried to be really strategic about it, and it worked out, and we just got super lucky, and everybody we work with is brilliant. And I think there's probably going to be another stage of, you know, how we continue to kind of grow the company, but served us really well.
Interesting. Very interesting. Was there a question from the audience? I believe Jeff Wood.
Yes. Hi, guys. Haven't seen you since breakfast. But you guys both took different strategies with your companies and kind of your launch communities. Like, Ben, you guys really diligently focused on Des Moines as you launched T-shirts, etc., things like that. Maybe talk about that role. I don't think Zarly did that in Kansas City, but Kansas City still really gravitated to what you were doing, even though it wasn't a focus area necessarily for you. Just talk about how these like Midwestern towns really helped you get to where you are, or did not.
Yeah, you go first.
So the reason we launched in Des Moines first was because it wasn't legal for us to like do business outside of Iowa. Our company was structured really differently at that time. So it was like hustle in Des Moines or hustle nowhere. So that's why we did it in Des Moines first. And when you're working on something you're really excited about, like, you just want people to know and you want to work on it and get social validation so you keep going. And Des Moines as a community was just really supportive. And then as we launched nationally, we kind of like threw a party and like a few hundred people showed up. We didn't really expect it. And then from there, like, it worked really well. And that was really why we did it that way in Des Moines. And then all of a sudden, like, there was just like pockets that came out of Des Moines, which was you can go buy breakfast, lunch, dinner, diapers, like really whatever you want with Dwolla, which is really kind of strange because Dwolla is not the easiest thing in the world to set up. It's not even the easiest thing in the world to understand. Like, we're getting a lot better in education, but it still sucks in comparison to what it should be. So we're working really heavily on that stuff right now. So that's just the way it kind of happened. I don't think that at the time we had any grand master scheme of this is why we're going to do it here. But because we were there, it ended up building like a really interesting little ecosystem, which was super valuable. And as we get more bandwidth to go try to duplicate it, which, you know, we have the money to go do it now, but it's just a bandwidth issue of, you know, we're bringing on people as fast as we can. But, you know, I have serious concerns over, you know, we're kind of scaling up to probably like 30, 40 right now. And I'm scared shitless that if I bring in five people, it's going to be like, I forgot I hired you and you don't know what to do today. So, you know, we've basically got to build the team to go build that team.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't know if we got this right or not yet, right? Like, we got very, very strong opinions from super smart people that were like, do not make Zarly available in any place but one city until you nail that city. Hmm. And we basically said, yeah. Like, we're going to do this other thing. And we had like 1,000 volunteers across 30 cities when we launched, which we put together over the course of like 30 days with just like some dudes just hustling their asses off and like flying around, going to talk to people, like just getting the pieces in place to see where it had a chance to take. You know, Kansas City ended up being a really, really active market out of the gate for us. And it's because I honestly think at the time it's because we have 15 people for this company that had about 18 people in it, like working in Kansas City. Yeah. And they like, it's hilarious, right? When you have like a 22-year-old kid who just graduated from college and they're working in a startup that's like in the news and stuff all the time, and like whatever, Ashton Kutcher's an investor and they think it's cool to tell their friends and stuff. Like, they do not shut up about it. Like, they go to the bars and you walk into the bars and you see all the 10 kids who like work for you. None of them are talking to each other and they're all talking to a dude at the bar like this. Like showing them what's going on. And I just think like that hustle and energy is like, if you have that on what you're working on, you just go with it. Like, I was not about to put a lid on that. And so as they moved to other places, and they were in New York, and they're in San Francisco, and they're in Seattle, we're like a consumer. Like, Ben has like a hard company to build in terms of like technology and infrastructure and all that kind of stuff. You know, we built our thing like pretty much like 4 times from scratch in the last year. You know, I mean, now we've actually got like a platform and the pillars in place that we're actually like making the existing thing better as opposed to throwing away and redoing it every time. But we need critical mass, and we need like, I mean, I need 10 million users, right? And I have like 320,000 right now. So like, we have work to do. I think just the way that we hit the market and the way that word caught on and stuff, like, it was very much like jump in with both feet, like go big or go home. We don't have time to test this in a market. I mean, we already have something like 80 clones that we're tracking that are like really like plagiarized, like our website, like word for word stuff. Like, it's like, honestly, copy and paste, really. Is that like as good as you're going to do here? And so I think like we have to go big, go fast. And like, that's why we'll know in a year. Like, we'll know in a year, like, what this company is going to look like. And we could have maybe taken 5 or 8 years to figure that out. But, like, you know, unique time, unique opportunity.
Huh. Interesting. Question?
Yeah, so you're a marketplace and you're payments. So
I agree with that. I agree with that, yeah. Right.
Make this happen.
You want to talk about that?
you can lead that one, buddy.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a while. There's some cool magic to be done between Zarly and Dwala. Like, I have no doubt about that. I think, you know, we're in the mode of like optimizing like user acquisition and engagement funnels and stuff. And it turns out that like for us, payment is at the very end of that funnel. Until we get like some of the steps into that funnel like really, really nailed, I mean, we could go spend some real time and energy making like a really, really elegant payment integration between our marketplace, and it would not actually like solve a huge immediate problem for either one of us. I'd bet an enormous amount of money that sometime in the next year there'll be some cool stuff going on there. And like, we've been talking to Ben's dudes, and his dudes have been talking to our dudes, and like, there's something to be done there. It's just going to take us a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Dwala's kind of platform as a technology, and it relates to, you know, marketplaces and, you know, mobile technologies, you know, building out the things that we do, really as it relates to APIs and things like that, to make it easy to integrate into other things, you know, is also a big part of where our head is at right now, is how we discover us and you like understand philosophically what we do. How do you get that into your platform? And, you know, simple checkout pages and mobile apps are like one thing, but like facilitating a range of like a really dynamic system of payments and then distributing money and so on and so forth is just kind of something where, like Bo said, just going to take a little bit of time, but we'll get there.
His dudes have been awesome to work with. So we've talked to a lot of payment companies and, these guys make magic happen. So
thanks, Bo.
Yeah.
I want to ask a question just in terms of what advice would you give? No BS, no cookie cutter answers in a sense. Like what to companies that are located outside of areas of innovation, areas of entrepreneurship? And I think I know both your answers, but I'd love to hear, you know, what advice, what couple pieces of information would you share with those companies that are outside of the area?
I think from watching Dwala and from our experience, like, I would say do not limit yourself to people who are within 20 miles of you, right? And that can mean who you hire, who advises you, who you raise money from. Like, if there's someone there locally, if there's like a reason, there's a strategic investor, there's an amazing person or whatever to get involved who is locally, awesome. But like, pick talent first and like location, like a, not even second, third, or fourth. Like, maybe it just doesn't even measure. Like, who cares? Like, I think it is all about giving yourself every possible chance to succeed. And in some cases, so I know a kid who runs a super cool, like it's a hard company like Ben's. They do fancy security stuff for Air Force and Navy and all this kind of stuff, multi-layer security systems for military. And this kid's from the UK. Right. And so like, for as much as people are like, I don't know if we can start a company in Kansas City or Des Moines or whatever, like, please go to Europe and try to do it. Like, it really, there's like hard things to overcome. And London's like great, for example. And like Italy is like super hard. And so, we already have like a huge advantage. But so he grew up in the UK and he wanted to start this company. He knew what he wanted to do. And he said, the one guy that I really want involved is this guy, Mike Maple Sr., who's kind of like a famous guy who's involved in a lot of early stage companies. And Mike said, I'll invest in your company and I'll be on your board, but I need you on a plane to Austin to move here next week. And he packed up everything. He got on a plane and he moved to Austin instantly. And that's where he started the company. And that's where it is now. And they've just been killing it for the last 10 years. And it was like what he had to do to make that company successful. And like, they're going to build a big company. And so I just think, I don't think you can make compromises and expect to be successful and say like, I'm going to dig in my heels on this, that, or whatever. I think you've got to go after like what's going to work. And I mean, it worked amazing for these guys, right? Like, Dwala got to do awesome stuff in Iowa, partly because like they were in Iowa, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, at our stage in the deal, it was like the reason we kind of like drew a line in the sand around Iowa at the time, where we were going through so many like technical integrations where there's just like so many like hyper complicated moving pieces, where the people that are working on them are in Iowa and like their brains are the only brains on the planet like understand this code, and it's never been done before and involves like $1 trillion opportunity, and like the Federal Reserve is there and blah 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 blah, and like moving everybody would just be like, we're going to lose 2 weeks.
Yep.
Like, there's no fucking way we can lose 2 weeks. It's not even within the realm of possibility. So I think as we go into the future, I mean, that probably won't be the case, but that was a big reason we kind of drew the line in the sand. And, you know, we always kind of said that as long as we can continue to build a company in Iowa, we will. And if there was ever a time when we can't, you know, I've said this many times, but we will expand outside of Iowa.
Yeah, I think the whole job is to exploit your unfair advantages, right? And so, like, if some of those are geographic, exploit them. If some of them are who you know, exploit them. If some of them are technical talent, exploit them. Like, that is like, what it takes to build companies that are really going to matter is, like, find your unfair advantages and exploit them. And I think that it's everything else comes after that.
That's good. Closing, wrap us up. Guys, you guys are both amazingly driven in terms of passion and hustle. Who drives you just personally, right? Who or what inspires you? What drives you guys?
I mean, mine's easy. Like, my co-founders are like the two hardest working dudes that I've ever been around in my entire life. And like, if you turn off for like a second, you feel like you're not keeping up with the dudes that you work with. Like, that's a shitty feeling. And they just have motors. I mean, they just don't ever turn off. And it is like nonstop. And when one of us is like, oh God, why did we do this? Like, the other two are like, go, 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 go. And so it's like the best, it is like the best business relationships I've ever had in my life with the co-founders that I have right now. And, man, all of us individually would have been so burned out well before we got a year into this thing that, like, between the three of us, it's I don't think we'll ever get burned out, actually. Like, I think we're going to make this thing work, and it's because everybody pushes everybody.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think that it's amazing. So my path is a little bit different with, you know, people working on the project and stuff like that. To where when I started the company, I did it like in my house and like incorporated on LegalZoom and like just like did all this dumb shit. And like, it wasn't dumb shit. It was just like, I decided I was going to do it. So I did it. But you know, as it related to kind of finding other people to join the team, it's really amazing that as you see other people around you adopt like some of your philosophies or adopt like the same idea and actually see what like could happen to the world if it was successful. And all of a sudden, like, they see the same vision like you see, like you can get drunk on that. It can get scary, but I mean, like, you can also start drinking your own Kool-Aid and get yourself into a lot of trouble. But that to me has been really amazing where, you know, somebody even comes up to me like, Ben, you can't do that because if we did it, it violates like this one thing that we said, like, we're never going to do. And like, that's super helpful keeping like the direction. But I have a super like obsessive personality about payments for some reason. Where like every time I see a payment, I just think it's super fucking inefficient. All I have to do is go to Starbucks to get pissed off about payments. like the fact that when I get paid through payroll, like it passes through this fucked up system that doesn't work right. And like, I know how to manipulate it and I understand like where the fraud is. Like, it just really pisses me off and really drives me fucking nuts. So because that's there and I don't think it's going to go away until like it doesn't affect me anymore, I'll probably stop, in which case I got a long ways to go. Or maybe one day I'll wake up and realize that like there's a better way to do it, but like right now I just can't really see anything else.
It's good. Let's give these guys a round of applause.